Well, I'd like to welcome back to the program Dr. David Close. He is the John H. McConnell Professor of Business Administration at Michigan State University, also chair of the internationally renowned Department of Supply Chain Management. His expertise includes logistical supply chain management strategy, operations, and information technology applications. David, great to see you again.
Thank you very much for having me here.
You recently gave a presentation at an autonomous vehicles forum. It was entitled, What Impact Will Autonomous Vehicles Have on the Supply Chain, Senders, and Receivers? Before we get into some of the points that you made, remind our listeners what we mean when we say supply chain.
Supply chain, particularly from a Michigan State perspective, means the end-to-end movement of product from wherever it comes out of a raw material, whether it's a field, a mine, the ocean, wherever, all the way through all the production processes to the consumer. And increasingly now today with the greening of the economy, also dealing with recycling and returns of those products. So we view it as a very end-to-end process and trying to manage that to meet the needs of the consumer, at the same time keeping costs down and keeping waste down.
We're definitely going to get to the greening of the supply chain in a moment, but I thought that I had the pleasure of attending your remarks at the Autonomous Vehicle Forum. A few of the key points that you made with respect to the impact that autonomous vehicles could have, positive and perhaps challenging, on the supply chain.
Autonomous vehicles could have some very positive aspects. Often we take it for granted how many of the vehicles are on the road and what they're hauling and how much fuel do they consume. Roughly, the movement of freight in North America is about half of the fuel consumption. The rest of it is passenger transportation. So we're dealing with a huge volume of fuel. And most of us take it for granted that when we walk to the store, drive to the store, that whatever we want is going to be there. And for the most part, it is. We have a very reliable and efficient transportation system. But as we're getting to now, the roads are increasingly congested with the trucks, and we have, particularly if we have bad weather or some other types of incidents, we get backups, and that backs up the whole system, and we may not have the products available. So that's the infrastructure behind the products we buy at the store. The other challenge, which we often take for granted, is that more and more of us are buying stuff instead of at the store, having it delivered directly to our home. And when it goes through the store, we take advantage of some economy of scale because we can drop the stuff off at a store in a semi. It means we have 40,000 pounds worth of stuff. Increasingly, we're buying product in the 10s and 20-pound category, having it delivered directly to our home, which is incredibly less efficient, both in terms of a congestion and usage of fuel. And that whole change in buying model, we really haven't dealt with in terms of designing the supply chain.
What I thought was interesting in your presentation, a lot of the advantages of autonomous vehicles for passengers also apply to freight. I mean, you mentioned safety and driver ability to do other things and what have you, but talk a little bit about some of those specifics, like the concept of platooning, for example, that you mentioned.
The concept of platooning or convoying is in use in Europe today. And the idea is that instead of having five trucks and five drivers, which means you pay for five drivers, the idea that you have a lead truck and have it followed by four other trucks without drivers and is connected electronically to the lead truck. And in that case, you can obviously reduce the number of drivers involved, but you also connect them in a way that it's not there's not the uncertainty. The reason when we drive on our own, we all have a certain degree of uncertainty as to what the guy in front of us is going to do. And depending on how risk-averse we are, some of us will get right up close and some not so close. If there's no uncertainty, meaning if the trucks are all connected to each other from an electronic point of view, then there can be less space, so we can haul more product and more densely using the roads. As another example, is the railroads. Right now, the railroads, the way they manage the railroads, there has to be a 10 mile boundary between the trains, because that's the way they manage the roadways. If you could using GPS systems, which they're moving to, then you can have a much tighter, which is a much better use of resources. So the concept is the same thing, and the railroads are definitely moving to that, as are the trucks, through the idea of platooning.
You had mentioned some of the safety factors, some of the efficiency factors and what have you. I understand from your presentation that there are some companies that are actually doing experiments now with autonomous trucks. I don't know about trains that you mentioned, but Daimler Chrysler
is doing some experimentation with autonomous trucks in testing under controlled conditions, which is where most of the testing is occurring at this point. I think the technology is probably going to get there before the environment will allow us to get there, for safety reasons and consumer reasons. We have introducing those autonomous vehicles in a freewheeling environment when you're dealing with 80 to 100,000-pound trucks is probably not something we want to do quickly. On the other hand, I think I mentioned that I think there's a lot of opportunities internal to facilities, whether it's inside a warehouse or inside a plant or inside a yard, where we have to move, or inside a port where we have to move a large volume of product or containers, and it's in a controlled environment, and it still requires drivers, but it's in a lot more control situation that we can learn a lot of lessons from.
So you may see the emergence of maybe autonomous forklifts and what have you in warehousing situations well before we see that happen on the roadways.
I think definitely we will. I mean, I know it happens right now. One of the things that Amazon does is with their Kiva systems is they move essentially pallets around the warehouse entirely autonomous. They, instead of having the picker go to the pallet, the pallet comes to the picker, and they move them in a lot of operations like that. So that's on a fairly structured basis. The next step would be a less structured basis where it's not as easy to document how they move, or they aren't as consistent in terms of how they move. And then you get into the yard situations where you have to pull a trailer up to the dock, and they unload it, and they pull it away. Now, those are all driven today by humans. Certainly, there's a lot of lessons we could get by having those moved in an autonomous environment.
One of the major advantages that you talked to about the impact of autonomous vehicles on supply chain was some of the environmental efficiencies, and that moves me into the last time we talked, which was several years ago, we talked about the greening of the supply chain, and on this program, we've talked to several people. In fact, just recently, somebody from Ford who is responsible for sustainable supply chain management, some of the things Ford's doing. Are you seeing these corporations continuing to move in this direction of greening of their entire supply chain?
Absolutely. I think many corporations are moving that direction for a number of different reasons. One is and I see it in the classroom. If you talk to the students today, they have a different mentality in terms of a green supply chain. In my generation, we didn't think of it. Today, it's a criteria they use in purchasing product, that if your company is not moving that direction, they're not going to be as active at purchasing products from you. I think the second factor is people or firms have started to understand what the cost of a non-greening or non-sustainable strategy is. So you're seeing supply chains designed to be more sustainable, whether it's through the identification of more suppliers that are closer to plants, or changes in products so it reduces the, say, haul of ubiquitous materials like water. So you get water closer by. So you're really changing the design of the supply chain. And another example is the chemical companies that are designing the supply chain to reduce hazardous risk, which you could say, well, maybe it's costing more, and that may be true. But from an overall risk point of view and sustainability, the environment, it may be much better off to reduce the distance that product is hauled if it's hazardous.
One thing Ford does, and you're probably aware of a lot more of these, but they have something they call the PACE program, and they actually help some of their suppliers move towards sustainability by providing expertise from their own experience. It seems like a real prudent way to go and a way to ensure that your entire supply chain is doing what you want it to do.
Absolutely, yes. The larger companies like Ford and GM and Chrysler are all moving to a more proactive effort to try to work with their suppliers. In many cases, their first-tier suppliers are pretty intelligent in terms of the process, and maybe the second-tier suppliers. But you get down fourth, fifth, sixth-tier supplier, they don't have any concept of what it means or what it requires or how to do it. And so they have to go out and work with them more proactively to try to educate them in terms of the process.
As a consumer who is concerned or as a listener consumer who's concerned about the companies they're doing business with when they tout their greenness, so-called greenness, I mean, how do you really know? I mean, I know there are some certifying agencies and what have you, but how do you know that this company that you're dealing with, whatever it may happen to be, is really doing what they're saying they're doing with respect to environmental sustainability?
The certifying companies are a good place to start. You also start looking at the strategies they're using in terms of identifying their suppliers and what are the real drivers they have, how they're fitting the sustainability in with the products they're delivering. And I think the companies are pressured enough at this point, to be honest, in terms of the sustainability that they've had to. I think there's been enough examples of where companies have suggested they're sustainable and they've been caught not being sustainable. Nobody will take that risk anymore because the true answer will come out in short order. There are too many people that know.
We've got a couple minutes left here, but I'd be remiss if I didn't give you an opportunity to talk about your number one ranked supply chain and logistics management program. Michigan State has been that way for many, many years. A little bit about the program and the number of students and where it sits as we speak.
MSU has been ranked number one in supply chain for many, many years, but specifically by U.S. News and World Report, our undergraduate program is ranked number one. We found out a couple weeks ago that our graduate program is also ranked number one. We finally took over MIT, so we're extremely proud of that. We graduate about 400 students a year. We're trying to cut it back a little bit. We're running out of capacity, and when you're in supply chain, you don't want to run out of capacity. We have about 120 graduate students that we graduate every year. The uniqueness about our program is we have an end-to-end supply chain perspective, so we try to educate our students on the whole supply chain process, not just one funnel, not just purchasing, not just manufacturing, and not just logistics, but the whole end-to-end process with suppliers and with customers. So one of the things we did really uniquely this year is we put, because students had a hard time understanding supply chain as well, or integrated supply chain, so we put together a video and we traced from the Meijer store shelf a bottle of Tide, a jug of Tide, and we went back to the Meijer distribution center, the Procter & Gamble distribution center, Procter & Gamble plant, and the Dow Chemical plant, and all the carriers in between. And we said, this is an integrated supply chain. And that's really what the perspective we take of supply chain. The second thing is we try to educate our students in all the activities involved, in the purchasing activities, the production, and the delivery part of it. So we're thinking that. And then the third part that I think makes our program unique is we look at the strategy, which is how does a company put together an integrated strategy? So if you look at Amazon, the thing that's really differentiating them is the integrated strategy to delivering to consumers. And we want our students to understand that perspective of strategic supply chain.
Well, it's certainly, I mean, all those years is number one, and now the grad program has displaced MIT. Congratulations on that. I've been talking with Dr. David Close. He is the John H. McConnell Professor of Business Administration at Michigan State University and chair of the very, very successful and renowned Department of Supply Chain Management, also at Michigan State University. David, great having you back on the program.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity.